What's the story? You read? You know the part? We're in Parshas Noach, friends. What Noach, Ish Tzadik Tamim. It's called an Ish Tzadik Tamim. Yes. It's a coffee stain. What happened in the car? You looked me at it. You're funny. That's what it is. There's an elephant in the room, just calling it out. That's what it is. It's fine. We're all in yeshiva here. Noach Ish is called an Ish Tzadik. He's a Tamim. He walks with God. He walks with God. And I'm not sure we find this so much elsewhere among great biblical personalities. But right away, as soon as we meet Noach, Rashi, in the name of Chazal, are placing him in context. Comparing Noach with Avram Avinu. Noach ish tzadik tamim bedarosav, in his generation. He was great in his generation. But had he been living at the time of Avram Avinu, a little bit later in history, compared to Avram Avinu, wouldn't have been such great shakes. Not only that, Yeshayahu HaNavi, in describing some of the more difficult stages of Jewish history, Churban and Galus, if you're going to do that, I have to cover the spot. That's no good. In discussing some of the more, describing the more difficult stages in Jewish history, and the more painful parts of exile, and the more trying events in our relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu as a nation, says Yeshayahu Navi, Berega Katan Azavtich, in that moment where we perceive a Kodesh Baruch Hu is, so to speak, turning his back on us, time of the Churban, an exile. But Rachmim Gedolim, but with great kindness and great chesed, great Rachmim, Hashem will gather us back in. B'shetzef Ketzef, Starti Panai, that time of Hester Panim, of God concealing Himself from us. The time of the Churban that Yeshayahu HaNavi later describes in history juxtaposes the picture of Churban and exile with Mabul, destruction. When Hashem decides to hit the reset button on the world, and refresh the entire thing, and oisvash the entire world, and the earth, and destroy everything, come at everything. Yeshayahu Navi juxtaposes the Churban of his days to Mei Noach, the waters of Noach. It's a heavy thing to cast on a person, to call a Mabul that destroyed, that wiped out almost all of humanity and creation, calling it the Mei Noach. We sit Shabbos and we talk about the Yonah Matzah Vama Noach, about the dove, the imagery of the dove that finds terra firma to rest on, compared to Klal Yisrael that finds within the Mabul of the week a place to rest on Shabbos. Yonah Matzah Vama Noach. And again, we refer to the Mei Noach, to the waters of Noach, the flood. What a heavy thing. What a heavy trip to lay on a person who's called Tzadik Tamim, who walks with God. Why the bad rap? Why the heavy baggage of this Churban, of this destruction, of this Mabul on Noach? The juxtaposition of Avram Avinu. I want to get like this. It's okay. What happened? I forgot. That is again, I'll destroy it. It's all good. It happens. We know more about Avram Avinu. We spend more time with Avram Avinu in Torah. Chazal tells us a lot more about Avram Avinu. Noach being compared to Avram, I mean, it's a basic thing. Avram was a go-getter. His doors were open, literally open tent Yiddishkeit, monotheism that's being brought to the masses. Avram's out there in the streets, the Rambam says, bringing the message to the people, and anyone who didn't meet on the road bringing his message across the world while he was on his diplomatic missions, meeting Mamre and Avimelech and Malki Tzedek, he would bring people into his own home proactively, take an activist stance and bring a message of Hashem and the divine will, Hashkacha, the existence of a God, purpose of meaning, into the world. Avram Avinu was a go-getter. Noach Noach, because of his passivity, because he takes a passive role, because he kind of holds himself back, maybe doesn't do enough, as much as he could have, as much as he should have, to bring that message of the impending disaster, to bring that message of godliness into the world that was getting mibulbal. So we end up seeing this juxtaposition, seeing this comparison, which casts Noach in a negative light relative to Avram. When Avram goes out and confronts the Anshei Sodom, Sodomites, Sodom, the Anshei Sodom Ra'im v'chatoyim l'Hashem ma'od, they were very, very, very bad. Ra'im v'chatoyim l'Hashem ma'od. Avram Avinu sees them and davens for them. And not only davens for them, but gets into a masa matan, a little bit of a discussion, an argument, a debate, depending on which Rishonim we understand, trying to change the will of Hashem, so to speak, to show mercy and save these Rishayim in Sodom. Whereas the Zohar HaKadosh says that Noach's mistake, Noach's fault, the reason why he gets this bum rap and the May Noach cast upon his name and legacy is because Noach didn't do enough to daven to be mevatel the gezerah. Noach didn't do enough to encourage others to daven, to change their ways, to make it happen. Noach didn't get out there and do what needed to be done. And yet he's called a tzaddik and a tamim. The comparison, the second comparison that Chazal make with Noach and trying to understand this person, the protagonist of our parsha, is with Moshe Rabbeinu. Noach is often compared to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe and Noach, the two Jews, the two people, Noach wasn't a Yid, the two characters, the two individuals, the two tzaddikim, whose a major part of their life, major turning point or a major event in their life took place in and around the Teva. Noach building a Teva to bring his family and the animals into it, and Moshe Rabbeinu being saved from the Gezer of Paro, he was thrown into the Nile River, being watched by his sister inside of a Teva. What's the essential difference between the Teva of Noach and the Teva of Moshe, besides obviously for the context and history, and the size of it, who's in there? Rashi points out the Diyuk and the Psukim when it comes to the Teva of Moshe Rabbeinu. Noach here covers his Teva from the outside and from the inside with zephes, with tar, to seal it, to make sure the water doesn't get into the cracks. In Parsha Shmos, when Moshe Rabbeinu was put inside of a Teva, foreshadowing kind of the way his life was going to go and the role he was going to play in Klal Yisrael and in the world, Rashi points out that there was only zephes, there was only tar on the outside, to spare the tzaddik, Moshe, to spare this child the bad smell. The Farshim point out the difference between Noach and Moshe is just that. Is that because Noach was insular, because Noach kept it to himself and didn't do enough to go out into the world and share it with others, and Moshe's entire life was going to be one of an activist nature, bringing the message to the people and to the world. So it's foreshadowed by the Teva of Noah having the Zephet, having the bad-smelling tar on the inside. Whereas Moshe was spared that because his whole life was giving to others. Hashem Tov HaKadosh, in the proverbial mashal imagery, paints it as such. In the cold, in the freezing cold, there's two ways that a person can warm themselves. What are they? You can put on a coat. You can put on a coat. It can light a fire. What a Jew puts on, a person puts on a coat, so we're keeping ourselves warm. We light a fire that illuminates and warms not just me, but those who are around us as well. Noach is called a tzaddik in pelts. He was a tzaddik, but his focus was on his own development, on his own existence, on his own salvation. As Moshe Rabbeinu, bless you, bless all of you. As Moshe Rabbeinu understood, and Avraham Avinu in the same way, understood that their role as tzaddikim, their development would come by focusing their personal growth and putting their, laying their chips down for other people. There's two different models. And it's interesting that the way that they received their message, Avram Avinu with the Biro Doleket, that the house is on fire, the palace is on fire, where is the owner? And Moshe Rabbeinu with the Snevor at the burning bush. Avram and Moshe were lighting a fire for the whole world. Noach was keeping it inside. Vayigdal anar vayar b'sivlosa vayitza elachav vayar b'sivlosa. Moshe Rabbeinu grows up. He goes out of Paro's palace, out of the lap of luxury. He leaves his personal comfort zone. And he goes out into the streets and sees Jews suffering. He identifies with them. And he stands up for a Jew who's being beaten by an Egyptian. And then again gets involved when there are two Jews who are arguing, who are fighting. He takes an activist stand. He can't stand by watching things not go the way they should be, the way they ought to be. There's an ethical imperative that Moshe Rabbeinu feels, the same one that Avram felt, that if there's something in the world that's not right, if there's something in the community, if there's something in my home, if there's something that's not right, that's not the way it can be or should be or ought to be, I have to make an effort to try to fix that. That's my shlichus, that's my job in the world, to fix, to heal. Ad kidei kach, Moshe Rabbeinu has to give up all of his comforts and his luxury and his personal safety to flee. He's being raised in Paro's house. He has to flee. He goes to Midian. And he's on the run. He's on the lam. He's somebody who doesn't have a place to stay, a place to live. He's a wanted man in Egypt. And he gets to Midian and he ends up by the well over there. And there's some Midianite shepherds that are hassling a bunch of girls or trying to get water. And he gets involved there also. What does it have to do with him? It's Midian. They're non-Jews. They end up, they're idolaters. But Moshe Rabbeinu, he can't. He can't stand by and watch something happen that shouldn't be, that's not right. So he gets involved. Rabbi Cutler, the Tzal and Mishnah Sir Biaran, his 50th Yahrzeit is coming up soon. Rav Aaron Cutler writes that the essential difference in these qualities between Moshe Rabbeinu and Avram on one hand and Noach on the other is that we see by Avram and we see by Moshe Rabbeinu tremendous activity in their life. It's not just that they were running around, running Shabbatons and doing chesed and volunteering here and this campaign there and going across the world to fix the whole world. They were focused on personal growth. They were thinking about their life. They were thinking about their place in the world. They were reassessing and reevaluating constantly their values, their priorities, what was important to them. Whereas Noah had a misima, Noah had a job, he had a goal, he had something he had to do, and came out his entire life. But the majority of the narrative that we learn about Noah, he's doing the same, he's building this teva, he's building this structure. And then he's in the structure. But Avram Avinu, there's movement, there's change, there's development, there's growth. Moshe Rabbeinu is going through things. He's changing, he's working on himself. He's working on these midos. He starts off as lo ish dvarim anochi. I'm not a person of words. Kvab peh, kvab lashon. He had an impediment in his speech. And then by the end, he says the entire Sefer Devarim. There's something dynamic happening. Moshe Rabbeinu and Avram Avinu, we see growth. Noach, there's dozens of years where we just see total inactivity. If we pay attention to the laning the Shabbos, Rav Aaron Cutler points out, you'll see huge chunks of his life that are just unaccounted for. There's not movement. This, the Medrash points out, the difference in trajectory between the way you see Moshe Rabbeinu's life and Noach's life. Noach starts off, the first time Noach is referred to as a person, as a man, is called Ish Tzadik. It's the first thing that we meet. El told us Noach Ish Tzadik. He's a righteous man. It's a pretty strong start. A lot of expectations. First round draft pick. He signed a big contract. He's the franchise player. What's going to? I mean, everyone's counting on Noach. Zohar says, Naichu Eila, Naichu Tata. He was someone who caused great nachas and was motzechein in the eyes of Hashem and found favor in the eyes of man. Ish tzaddik tamim. He was someone who was whole. But by the end of his life, Noach is referred to as an ish ha'adama, a man of the earth. He's debased. The end of the parsha, features the theme. He's debased. He's degraded. He's humiliated. We don't need the Mamari Chazal and the Midrashim about what happened with his sons. He's debased. Such great potential. Such great potential in the beginning of his life, in the beginning of his story. But by the end, Nebuch. By the end, Isha Adama is a debased man of the earth. Somebody who just escapes reality, gets intoxicated, and ends up in some very, very compromised situations. Whereas Moshe Rabbeinu, it's the inverse trajectory. Moshe Rabbeinu starts off on the lamb he's running, he's being raised in Beis Paro. When he gets to Midian, he stands up for these shepherdesses, for these women, for these girls who ends up being one of them as his future wife. He takes this activist stance. He gets involved. The girls go home and to their father at the Yisro, and he says, they tell the whole story. Shepherds were hassling us, and this man stood up for us. He said, "Who is this?" They said, "Ish Mitzri Tzilena Miyad Aroim," an Egyptian man. An Egyptian man. Mitzrayim was Ervas Haaretz, the lowest place. Sexual immorality, swarthiness, loneliness, a low moral character. The Mempet Shari Tumu, the lowest place. Spiritually, ethically, in terms of its morals. Klal Yisrael are praised for remaining separate from the Egyptians. Ish Mitzri, a Megushama, a physical, lowly Egyptian man. That's how Moshe Rabbeinu is first referred to in the Torah. But by the end of his life, after day in and day out working on himself, constantly challenging himself, and engaging his mission in the world to save Klal Yisrael and to do for others, by the end of his life, Moshe Rabbeinu is called Ish HaElokim, a man of God. He's called an Ever Hashem. So as Noah starts Ish Tzaddik, and he ends up Ish Adama, Moshe Rabbeinu starts as an Ish Mitzri, and works his way up to being an Ish Elokim. Says Rabbi Aaron Cutler, because he was focused on growth. He was aware of it. He was thinking about growing and moving, changing and developing. Moshe Rabbeinu lived a life of activism, outside and inside. During these days, this is the first week of Cheshvan. In the Olam HaTorah, in the world of Torah, in the world of the yeshiva, which we're all fortunate to be a part of, Cheshvan is a time of beginning. Some say we're getting back into the Zman. Some say we're starting again, starting something new. Bereishis, the Rimanover says, remember, Rimanover says, is Beis Reishit. Beis Reishit. A second beginning. Every beginning needs another beginning. Every Reishit, every start needs another start. Cheshvan comes, Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan, it's like another start. It's a very different energy than what happened in Tishrei, which was very noisy, very exciting, chock full of everything. Rosh Hashanah and Shofar, apples and honey, remember that? Remember when there was honey on the table? There's apples and honey, and there was pomegranates all over the place, and shofar blowing, and there's some Gedalia. We had a Sesame Tshuva and Slichos. We had Yom Kippur. Then we had all the preparations for Sukkot and the Sukkah and the Arba Minim and all the Chol HaMoed and some Chespe Shoevan. All of that, some Ches Torah. And now comes Cheshvan. It's a totally different thing. And the Bali Musar write, Dessler, and others, that the imagery that we're reading about in this week's Parsha of Noach building a safe space, building a teva, something which is very relevant for all of us that are coming from the world, which we're engaging the world, but realizing that the world is chaotic outside. Things are busy, things are hectic, things are crazy. And as a Shraga 5 of Michael Levish said, when a Jew comes, walks into a yeshiva, the beginning of Cheshvan, in the first parsha we read, in this Zman, is Parsha's Noach. We have to know that that parsha is being read to us specifically, personally. And the first shmuz he would give every year of the Zman would say, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs Noah, Tzohar ta'asa l'teva, illuminate the teva, illuminate it, make it shine. Tzohar ta'asa l'teva. Hashem tells Noah, when you're building this teva, you're building this safe space, this place that's going to protect you from the outside elements of the crazy world of flooding outside. Tzohar ta'asa l'teva. Walk into the Beis Medrash, into the yeshiva, and make it shine. Teva, an ark, also means tevos are a word. The roshay tevos, the teva is also a word. Make the words shine, illuminate them. The words of Torah, the words of tefillah, make them shine. Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh restored the focus of a Jew on avodas tefillah. It's davening, it's not just head, but heart, davening. Of all the places the Baal Shem Tov could have included his teachings on tefillah, of all the places in the Torah, maybe by Avraham Avinu fighting for the Rishayim of Sodom, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu davening 515 times to get into Eretz Israel, maybe the 13 attributes of mercy that it revealed. There's lots of places where Yitzchak and Rivka are davening together. There's lots of places where people are praying in the Torah. Lots of tefillah going on in the Chamisha Chumash Torah. But the Omer HaTefillah of the Helag of Baal Shem Tov is in our parasha, Parshas Noach. Because of that directive, Tzohar, Tasa L'Teva. Hashem tells Noach, Tzohar, illuminate the Teva. Make sure that there's a source of light there. Teva, the Baal Shem Tov says, comes from letters. Tevas, word, Rosh Tevas. Illuminate the words. Torah shouldn't just be something that we're going through the motions. Make it shine. Bring light into it. Our learning, our davening, it could be alive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't expect to be here at the one. Kind of happens. Tzohar ta'asa l'teva. What does Rashi say this Tzohar is, by the way? What's this Tzohar? You saw the parsha?
It says it's a window.
Ah, so there's two opinions, Rashi. One is that there's a window, there's a chalon window, and the other is that there's some kind of a stone, some kind of a gem. What's the difference? Well, one's window, one's a gem. That's the difference. And for David, the chalos on this, and that. So I mean him in the window. Friends, what the difference between a window and a gem of Nachman's teaching is like this. A window brings light from the outside in. Light comes from the outside, the sun shines and comes in through the window to illuminate the teva from the outside in. But this Evan Yikara, this precious stone that would kind of sparkle and give off light, is a different way of illuminating the teva. Second opinion in Rashi is that there was this precious gem that illuminated from within and out. Noach wasn't wrong for putting the emphasis on his own personal and spiritual growth. There's different types of tzaddikim, there's different types of models. Not everybody's an extrovert. Not everybody wants to stand up on the chair and lead zmiros at the Shabbaton. Not everybody wants to go and move to some far-flung place to go bring the message of God to the world. Some people want to sit in the Beis Medrash. Not everybody wants to be like Avraham Avinu and have open doors. Everybody want to close the door and contribute to Klal Yisrael through their tefillah, through their tehillim. It's also very holy. There's different models. Says Rabbeinu, there's different ways of illuminating our lives. There's different ways of being inspired. There's different ways of engaging our shlichus in the world. From the outside in, and from the inside out. Putting an emphasis on the light that's out there, or an emphasis on the light that's in here. But the main thing is, Tzohar ta'asa l'teva. The same is true with personal growth. There's different ways of going about growth. How do you change? How do I make it happen? How do I see development? For those who say, the first thing you have to do is the motions. Change your name, change the way you look, change what we're wearing, change what we present ourselves, work from the outside in. Acharei pa'ulos, after the actions, come the levavos, come the hearts, work from the outside in. That's the light that's coming through the window.
I was saying, no, I want to start from the inside out. I want to feel it in the penis and then let it affect the outsides. Okay, there's two different ways somewhere along the path to intersect. But the main thing is to illuminate the teva. These days, Parshas Noach, the first week of Cheshvan, every year I think about a few. There are a couple of Jews in this. I know today you were by Har Zeisim, by Rabbeni. For years, I'd say more than 15 years. The first week of Chel, during the past 15 years, I wasn't always in yeshiva at this time of the year. But always, my mind is drawn to those tzaddikim, to those, there are some very, very great Jews who left the world during this week of Cheshvan. Today was the Yahrzeit of Reb Simcha Wasserman. You heard of Reb Simcha Wasserman? Any of Reb Simcha Wasserman? Reb Simcha Wasserman, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, the Ben Shel Kedoshim, was the son of Reb Elchanan Wasserman, Rosh Yeshiva in Kovna before the war, was killed al Kiddush Hashem. Reb Simcha survived the war, came to the United States with his wife. They didn't have children. They didn't have children of their own. In the years before the war, he met with the Chafetz Chaim. He had a lengthy talk with the Chafetz Chaim, who was his father's Rebbe Muvak, Reb Elchanan Wasserman's Rebbe Muvak. And the Chafetz Chaim talked to him. In the middle of the conversation, he kind of stopped what he was talking about and shifted to a completely different topic, foreshadowing what was going to be, and told him that there's going to be, in the world, there's going to come a time where there's going to be tremendous pizur, and Jews are going to be scattered throughout the world. And those Jews, the nidachim, who are cast off in the far-flung places in the world, like the Jews who spread out after the Migdal Bavel, people who were spread out all over the world. Reb Simcha said he didn't know what he was talking about. But the Chafetz Chaim told him those Jews need someone to take care of them. Those Jews need someone to remind them that they're Yidden. So after the war, Reb Simcha Wasserman came, he had a wife, and either he came to the United States, they ended up in America, broken. Without children of their own, his wife said, maybe that's what the Chafetz Chaim was saying. Maybe our job is to go find those Jews who are cast off in far-flung places. So we went to Detroit and opened the yeshiva in Detroit. And then he went from there to California and opened up a yeshiva in California. And then came to Yerushalayim and opened the yeshiva here, or Elchanan. He went all over the place, just Be'eretz Lo Zerua, starting yeshivas and trying to bring Jews close to Yiddishkeit and the Torah again, to awaken Talmud Torah in the world after the Chorban of the Holocaust. So Simcha, as Yard said it was today, said about Noach, you know, Noach gets, again, this bad rap for being called Ish Adama, the man of the earth. Because, I mean, what happens? Teva, the rain recedes, the waters recede. Hashem says, okay, send out the dove. Terra firma, the things dried up, okay, you can come out. He comes out into this world, which was a world that was built with people and animals and life, and now it's decimated and destroyed, and Noach sees it, and what does he do? Vayitaker, he plants a vine, and he gets drunk, it's too much for him to handle, it's too much to bear. Ask Reb Simcha Wasserman, could you blame him? You know what it is? You know, this experience, that churban, that destruction, that devastation? He didn't want to face reality, he didn't want to deal with it. Rabbi Lau's autobiography? Die. Mentions a story that he went there with his father-in-law and met a Jew broken, survived the Holocaust, but had no family. They went into his apartment, and when this person was in his last moments of life, his last days of life, and the place stunk alcohol. The guy was intoxicated and drunk. You can't blame somebody who saw that destruction, wants to disengage from reality. But Simcha Wasserman said, but you know why Noach is held accountable? Why it's called May Noach? Because it's true, in normal circumstances, you can rationalize, you can understand that a person would want to turn their back on that. But he was living in an exceptional time. He had a shlichus. He had a job to do. There wasn't anyone else who could do that job. And that Noach didn't step up to the plate, that he didn't take the chance, maybe because he didn't feel roi to, he didn't feel he was worth it, he was worthy of it. Because of that, his legacy is one of having not fulfilled his potential. This coming Rosh Hashanah, the yard side of the Piasetzna Rebbe, the Ish Kodesh of Piasetzna. After losing his wife and his family, his son, in the war, continued being a Rebbe in Warsaw, in the Warsaw ghetto, helping Jews go to mikveh with Mesiras Nefesh. Stories about him making some kind of a makeshift sukkah with Menachem Mezemba in the Warsaw ghetto with incredible Mesiras Nefesh, writing his Chidushei Torah, his teachings from Shal Shudis and from Shabbos on inside of scraps of paper and cement bags. That was found after the war. He was killed. Deported and killed. But these Jews who were metafked during times of mabul, times of churban, times of destruction, who stood up to the challenge and continued to fight, continued to build something which is very empowering. Panov Zhirav, you heard of, friends? Yosef Kahneman? One of my heroes. One of the builders of the Jewish people. Yosef Kahneman came to Eretz Israel after the war. He survived the war. He was in Chutz La'aretz. He wasn't in Europe when the Holocaust broke out, and he survived. And he came to Eretz Israel and built Panovich against all odds. An amazing personality. An amazing visionary. But he was plagued his entire life. Why he survived and others didn't. His yeshiva, his kolim, his community, all of Panovich in Lithuania went up in flames. His family, all gone. And his whole life he was plagued. Why did I survive? Maybe I'm like a captain that didn't go down with the ship. And in the hesped that Shmuel Rozovsky gave for the Panovich Rav in 1969, he quoted this medrash here. It's the third source down. A conversation that takes place between Noach and Moshe. Noach amar l'Moshe, ani gadol mimcha shenitzalti midor ha-mabul. Noach says, Moshe, I have one up on you because I was saved from the mabul. Moshe says, ani nisaleisi yoter mimcha, but I have one up on you. At yitzalti samcha, you atzmacha, you saved yourself. But the ship went down. Ay, echei te'egel, when Klal Yisrael is coming away from the chuppah, looking at another woman, so to speak, when Klal Yisrael walk away from that chuppah and already have one eye on someone else, turn our back on God. You know, there are those, our Rebbe doesn't say Chayta Egel, he can't say it. And one time, he was saying Ein Gimel, and he was saying Chayta Ein Gimel. And like, it took me, and I looked and he said Egel. And then he got emotional, got choked up over it. The Chayta Egel, what a rupture. What a trauma in the story of the Jewish people. And there, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, Chayta Egel, you're turning your back on me after the Torah? Finished. Done with. Who needs you? You're going to destroy Klal Yisrael. I'll start again through Moshe. And Hashem says to Moshe, I'm going to destroy Am Yisrael. I'm going to get rid of these people. We're going to start again, just you and I. And what does Moshe Rabbeinu say? No, but you promised that you're not going to destroy the world again. You made a promise to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Hashem says, I'll fulfill it through you. And this Medrash goes on to explain here this great moment, this heroic moment in Moshe Rabbeinu's life. His greatest Mesiras Nefesh. His greatest moment of activism. Where Moshe davens for the Jewish people and davens again. And won't take no for an answer from Hashem. And he tells the Ribono Shel Olam, if you're going to destroy Klal Yisrael, if you're going to punish the Jewish people, Macheni na misifracha, wipe me out of your Sefer. I don't want to be in the Torah. I don't want this. I don't want... What good is being the captain if there's no ship? The difference between Moshe Rabbeinu and Noach is in that moment. Noach saved himself, he saved his family. But he didn't engage the world enough, he didn't go out there and daven and push and scream. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Ma, what do I need out of you? Thinking, I want this? If not for Klal Yisrael, I don't want any part of it. Macheni na misifracha. Says the Arizal, Rav Olson explains, Macheni na misifracha, Macheni, wipe me out, erase me, the same letters as Mei Noach. At that moment, Moshe Rabbeinu is completing the story of Noach, is fixing it, is being attacking what Noach fell short in, Moshe Rabbeinu completes. Wipe me out, I don't want to be here. I don't want any part of your story. I don't want any part of your narrative. Take me out of the Torah. That's the mysterious nefesh of Moshe Rabbeinu. The captain says, I'm not interested in being in the world if I don't have my ship, if I don't have my people. question is, why wasn't Noach able to go out of his comfort zone to do this for Klal Yisrael, to do this for the world? Moshe, okay, Avram, they left their comfort zone. Avram, we know the Midrashim of Avram destroying his father's idols and just going out there into the great wide open, the great unknown. Moshe Rabbeinu, we talked about. Why can't Noach do it? What holds Noach? And forget Noach. Why can't we? Why can't we do what we know we need to do? Whether it's illuminating the world with a window, illuminating ourselves with that precious gem. What is it that holds us back? What is it that holds us back from doing what we know is right, is real, is good? Whether it's hunger or being activists to raise money for good causes, or volunteering, or extending ourselves to a guy in our shir who's struggling socially, it's as important as whatever's happening in Darfur. More immediate, so it's not as exciting. Not exciting Facebook groups about it, but. What is it that holds us back, that prevents us from doing what we know is right and good and important? What is it that Noach just couldn't get over? What was it holding him back? The Kedushas Levi breaks it down as follows. There's the different types of tzaddikim. There are those Jews, those tzaddikim, who go out there to save the world and engage Yidden and Klal Yisrael and Yiddishkeit and the Jewish community in an activist way, in a public way, tumble things up and make it happen. And then there are those tzaddikim who affect the world, who are looking to affect the world and in Klal Yisrael from their ivory tower, from inside. Both are legitimate, both are important, both are on the same team and two sides of the same coin. There are also different times in a person's life, in a person's in a person's development, in a person's week or day or month, that sometimes we want to go out, sometimes we want to go from within. Sometimes we feel like the best thing and the most important thing I could do is to grow and steig and push myself in the base medrash. And then I have a break, a few hours during the week. So that's a time to go out, to help and to fix and to do and to volunteer. I have a summertime. So I can sit and learn. I can sit and serve Klal Yisrael that way, or I could sit and go and serve Klal Yisrael in another way. I can heal the world from inside, and I can heal the world from outside. Both are legitimate. Both are equally important. The Chalon and the Evan Ikar, both are equally important. The Gush Levi says there's different types of tzaddikim, there's different types of models, different types of Jews. Noach, related to being that type of tzaddik, that person, that model of affecting the world from within. Being poel, affecting the upper worlds with Torah and with tefillah. Damal mala mimcha. What's happening in the upper worlds is a direct result of what we're doing down here. Hashem tzilcha. Talked about this before Rosh Hashanah time. It's reflected on high what's taking place down here. The problem is, Rashi tells us, was that Noach was mekatnei ha'emunah. Friends, did you see this Rashi? And Noach was mekatnei ha'emunah. You know what that means? What's mekatnei ha'emunah? Noach was an oyi of little faith. Noach was a person who had a lack of emunah. You know, how is that possible? Already God spoke to him. He's called tzad. He's called a chaman. It says he walked with God. And yet Noach is tagged as someone. He's tagged as someone who was mekatnei ha'emunah. He had a lack of faith. Says the great lady Yitzchak ben Sarah Sasha on the left side. Noach HaGamsha, Hayat Tzadik Godol V'Tomim. He was this great man. Hayat Kotan Da'inah Ma'od. He didn't realize how great he was. In his own eyes, he was small. He didn't realize his potential. He didn't realize his abilities. He didn't realize what he could do to affect the world. V'lo Hayelo Amuna Ba'atzmo. Shehu Tzadik Moshe L'yachol Avatel HaGzeira. He didn't believe in himself. He was Mekatnei HaEmunah. Noach didn't believe that he was entrusted with this ability to affect the world. He didn't think that he could make a difference. He didn't think that he was
why am I any different than the rest of these people?
The people in the world are also good. I'm going to daven, they're going to daven. Why is my tefillah going to do anything different? Why am I special?
Therefore, Noach is labeled as Mekatnei Hamuna. And if a person's lacking belief in themselves and their abilities, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was acting through us and engaging us as a partner in creation, then that's called having a lack of Hamuna. And we don't understand God. We don't understand what God is doing in the world and why God made a world and why God made me and what this is all about. And then the whole world is just a marble. It's just a marble. It's just one big flood of chaos and a disaster all around. But if a Jew understands how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trusting us and believing in us more than we believe in ourselves, then we have an obligation, not just a right, but an obligation, a privilege to take part in this. To speak up. Avraham Avinu knew that. Moshe Rabbeinu struggled with it. But he pushed. He worked at it. It wasn't natural for him. They're not going to listen to me. But he worked at it. He engaged it. Noach said, who am I? What am I to do? I'm just a regular guy. I didn't grow up with it. I didn't have it when I was younger. I didn't do it. That's called being Mekatnei Hamuna. Friends, you're in this magnificent teva. Illuminate it. Make it shine. From within, from without. Let the learning be filled with light. Filled with simcha. Tzohar tasa l'teva. Illuminate this place. Allow the light to come in. Allow the light from within to shine outward. Learn from Avraham Avinu, from Moshe Rabbeinu. Learn from the mistakes of Noach. Learn from Noach's. Just, it's like you almost want to read the story and say, come on, you can do it. Noach.
He didn't believe in himself. And the whole world could have been saved.
Ashrecha nar Yisrael v'ashrei chelkecha. The words of the Pisetzner Rebbe. Zeretzayt Motzei Shabbos, I have the zechus to mark with Reb Davidel. Fortunate are you, young men of Israel, v'ashrei chelkecha, ashreinu matov chelkenu. How fortunate we are, privileged we are to be Jews. Es haTorah or Hashem lilmod zachita. The Torah, the light of God, we have the privilege of learning. These are the words of the Eish Kodesh of Piasetzna and the Chovas HaTaminim written before the war. How do we have the strength to keep things going in the Warsaw Ghetto? How did Reb Simcha Wasserman, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, have the fortitude and the confidence and the ability to go to Detroit and to Los Angeles? How did the Ponovizhe Rav, Mutzal Me'esh, plagued every night of his life? Until he died in 1969, Reb Shmuel Rozovsky said he was plagued with guilt and the question of why did I survive and my ship went down? How did they continue? How did they become great? How did they build what they built? The answer is they understood that HaKadosh Baruch Hu believes in us. Ashrecha nar Yisrael, borei ha'olam sameach b'cha. The Creator of the world is taking pride in us, has nachas in us, believes in us. We have an opportunity of a lifetime this night. An opportunity of a lifetime here, in this teva, in this wondrous place, mamash. Take advantage of it. Believe in ourselves. Believe how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu is believing in us. How much nachas we're bringing to the Ribono Shel Olam with everything that we're doing, with every word of Torah and every word of tefillah. Tzohar tasa l'teva. We're fixing the world. We're saving the world. We just have to believe that we can do it and that it's actually happening. And Bez Hashem will see tremendous growth, tremendous building, tremendous renewal. And great Yeshuas for us and for all of Klal Yisrael. Good Shabbos.
Now the chair, sign your name on the sign sheet. The sign sheet is going to be right over here.